wrong with him. He looked like a good fella, the kind that would hold a job steady and work at the same job a long time without bothering anybody about a raise, neither, long as they let him keep on working. That was what he looked like. He looked like, except when he was at work, he would just be something around. I just couldn't imagine anybody, any woman, knowing that they had ever slept with him, let alone having anything to show folks to prove it. "Ain't you shamed," his wife says, "talking that way before a lady." They are talking in the dark. "Anyway, I can't see you blushing any," he says. He continues, "I never thought anything about it until that night when we camped. She was sitting up on the seat by me, and I was talking to her like a fella would, and after a while it begun to come out how they had come from Alabama. She kept on saying, 'We come,' and so I thought she meant her and the fella in the back, about how they had been on the road nigh 8 weeks now." "You ain't had that chap no 8 weeks," I says. "Not if I know color." And she said it was just born 3 weeks ago down at Jefferson. And I said, "Oh, where they lynched that nigger. You must have been there then." And she clammed up, like he had done told her not to talk about it. I knowed that's what it was. So we rode on, and then it was coming toward night, and I said, "We'll be in a town soon. I ain't going to sleep in town. But if you all want to go on with me tomorrow, I'll come back to the hotel for you in the morning about 6 o'clock. And she sat right still, like she was waiting for him to say. And after a while, he says, "I reckon with this here truck house, you don't need to worry about hotels." And I never said anything, and we was coming into the town, and he said, "Is this here any size town?" "I don't know," I says. "I reckon they'll have a boarding house or something here, though." And he says, "I was wondering if they would have a tourist camp." And I never said anything. And he said, "With tents for hire. These here hotels are high and with folks that have a long piece to go." They hadn't never yet said where they was going. It was like they didn't even know themselves. Like they was just waiting to see where they could get to. But I didn't know that then. But I knowed what he wanted me to say, and that he wasn't going to come right out and ask me himself. Like if the Lord aimed for me to say it, I would say it. And if the Lord aimed for him to go to a hotel and pay maybe $3 for a room, he would do that too. So I says, "Well, it's a warm night. And if you folks don't mind a few mosquitoes and sleeping on them bare boards in the truck." And he says, "Sho, it will be fine. It'll be mighty fine for you to let her." I noticed then how he said her. And I begun to notice how there was something funny and kind of strained about him. Like when a man is determined to work himself up to where he will do something he wants to do and that he is scared to do. I don't mean it was like he was scared of what might happen to him, but like it was something that he would die before he would even think about doing it if he hadn't just tried everything else until he was desperate. That was before I knew. I just couldn't understand what in the world it could be then. And if it hadn't been for that night and what happened, I reckon I would not have known at all when they left me at Jackson.
"What was it he aimed to do?" the wife says.
"You wait till I come to that part. Maybe I'll show you, too." He continues, "So we stopped in front of the store. He was already jumping out before the truck had stopped. Like he was afraid I would beat him to it, with his face all shined up like a kid trying to do something for you before you change your mind about something you promised to do for him. He went into the store on a trot and came back with so many bags and sacks he couldn't see over them, so that I says to myself, 'Look a here, fella, if you were aiming to settle down permanent in this truck and set up housekeeping.' Then we drove on and came pretty soon to a likely place where I could drive the truck off the road into some trees, and he jumps down and runs up and helps her down like she and the kid were made out of glass or eggs.
And he still had that look on his face like he pretty near had his mind made up to do whatever it was he was desperated up to do, if only nothing I did or she did beforehand would prevent it, and if she only didn't notice in his face that he was desperated up to something. But even then, I didn't know what it was.
"What was it?" the wife says.
"I just showed you once. You ain't ready to be showed again, are you?"
"I reckon I don't mind if you don't. But I still don't see anything funny in that. How come it took him all that time and trouble anyway?"
"It was because they were not married," the husband says. "It wasn't even his child." I didn't know it then, though. I didn't find that out until I heard them talking that night by the fire, when they didn't know I heard, I reckon. Before he had done got himself desperated up all the way. But I reckon he was desperate enough, all right. I reckon he was just giving her one more chance.
He continues.
"So there he was, skirmishing around, getting camp ready, until he got me right nervous. Him trying to do everything and not knowing just where to begin or something. So I told him to go rustle up some firewood, and I took my blankets and spread them out in the truck. I was a little mad then at myself about how I had got into it now, and I would have to sleep on the ground with my feet to the fire and nothing under me. So I reckon I was short and grumpy, maybe, moving around, getting things fixed, and her sitting with her back to a tree, giving the kid his supper under a shawl and saying ever so often how she was ashamed to inconvenience me and that she aimed to sit up by the fire because she wasn't tired no way, just riding all day long and not doing anything. Then he came back, with enough wood to barbecue a steer, and she began to tell him, and he went to the truck and taken out that suitcase and opened it and taken out a blanket. Then we had it, sure enough. It was like those two fellas that used to be in the funny papers, those two Frenchmen that were always bowing and scraping at the other one to go first, making out like we had all come away from home just for the privilege of sleeping on the ground. Each one trying to lie faster and bigger than the next. For a while, I was a mind to say, "All right, if you want to sleep on the ground, do it. Because be darned if I want to." But I reckon you might say that I won. Or that me and him won. Because it wound up by him fixing their blanket in the truck, like we all might have known all the time it would be, and me and him spreading mine out before the fire. I reckon he knew that would be the way of it anyhow. If they had come all the way from South Alabama like she claimed, I reckon that was why he brought in all that firewood just to make a pot of coffee with and heat up some tin cans. Then we ate, and then I found out.
Found out what? What it was he wanted to do?
Not right then. I reckon she had a little more patience than you. He continues. So we had eaten and I was lying down on the blanket. I was tired and getting stretched out felt good. I wasn't aiming to listen any more than I was aiming to look like I was asleep when I wasn't. But they had asked me to give them a ride. It wasn't me that insisted on them getting in my truck. And if they seen fit to go on and talk without making sure nobody could hear them, it wasn't any of my business. And that's how I found out that they were hunting for somebody. Following him, or trying to. Or she was, that is. And so all of a sudden I says to myself, Here's another gal that thought she could learn on Saturday night what her mammy waited until Sunday to ask the minister. They never called his name, and they didn't know just which way he had run. And I knew that if they had known where he went, it wouldn't be by any fault of the fella that was doing the running. I learned that quick. And so I heard him talking to her about how they might travel on like this from one truck to another and one state to another for the rest of their lives and not find any trace of him. And her sitting there on the log, holding the chap and listening quiet as a stone and pleasant as a stone and just about as nigh to being moved or persuaded. And I says to myself, "Well, old fella, I reckon it ain't only since she's been riding on the seat of my truck while you rode with your feet hanging out the back end of it that she has traveled out in front on this trip. But I never said anything. I just lay there and them talking, or him talking, not loud. He hadn't even mentioned marriage, neither. But that's what he was talking about. And her listening placid and calm, like she had heard it before, and she knew that she never even had to bother to say either yes or no to him. Smiling a little she was. But he couldn't see that. Then he give up. He got up from the log and walked away. But I saw his face when he turned, and I knew that he hadn't give up. He knew that he had just give her one more chance, and that now he had got himself desperated up to risking all. I could have told him that he was just deciding now to do what he should have done in the first place. But I reckon he had his own reasons. Anyway, he walked off into the dark and left her sitting there, with her face kind of bent down a little and that smile still on it. She never looked after him, neither. Maybe she knew he had just gone off by himself to get himself worked up good to what she might have been advising him to do all the time herself, without saying it in out-and-out words, which a lady naturally couldn't do. Not even a lady with a Saturday night family. Only I don't reckon that was it, either. Or maybe the time and place didn't suit her, let alone an audience. After a while, she got up and looked at me, but I never moved. And then she went and climbed into the truck, and after a while I heard her quit moving around, and I knew that she had done got fixed to sleep. And I lay there. I had done got kind of waked up myself now, and it was a right smart while. But I knew that he was somewhere close, waiting maybe for the fire to die down or for me to get good to sleep. Because sure enough, just about the time the fire had died down good, I heard him come up, quiet as a cat, and stand over me, looking down at me, listening. I never made a sound. I don't know, but I might have fetched a snore or two for him. Anyway, he goes on toward the truck, walking like he had eggs under his feet, and I lay there and watched him, and I says to myself, "Old boy, if you'd have just done this last night, you'd have been 60 miles further south than you are now, to my knowledge. And if you'd have done it 2 nights ago, I reckon I wouldn't ever have laid eyes on either one of you." Then I got a little worried. I wasn't worried about him doing her any harm she didn't want done to her. In fact, I was pulling for the little cuss. That was it. I couldn't decide what I had better do when she would begin to holler. I knew that she would holler, and if I jumped up and run to the truck, it would scare him off. And if I didn't come running, he would know that I was awake and watching him all the time, and he'd be scared off faster than ever. But I ought not to worry. I ought to have known that from the first look I'd taken at her and at him. I reckon the reason you knew you never had to worry was that you had already found out just what she would do in a case like that, the wife says. Joe, the husband says, I didn't aim for you to find that out. Yes, sir, I thought I had covered my tracks this time.
Well, go on. What happened?
What do you reckon happened with a big, strong gal like that? Without any warning that it was just him, and a darn little cuss that already looked like he had reached the point where he could bust out crying like another baby? He continues. There wasn't any hollering or anything. I just watched him climb slow and easy into the truck and disappear, and then didn't anything happen for about while you could count maybe 15 slow, and then I heard one kind of astonished sound she made when she woke up. Like she was just surprised and then a little put out without being scared at all. And she says, not loud neither, "Why, Mr. Bunch, ain't you ashamed? You might have woke the baby, too." Then he come out the back door of the truck. Not fast, and not climbing down on his own legs at all. I'd be dog if I don't believe she picked him up and set him back outside on the ground like she would that baby if it had been about 6 years old, say, and she says, "You go and lay down now and get some sleep. We got another fur piece to go tomorrow."
Well, I was downright ashamed to look at him, to let him know that any human man had seen and heard what happened. I'd be dog if I didn't want to find the hole and crawl into it with him. I did, for a fact. And him standing there where she had set him down. The fire had burned down good now, and I couldn't hardly see him at all. But I knew about how I would have been standing and feeling if I was him. And that would have been with my head bowed, waiting for the judge to say, "Take him out of here and hang him quick." And I didn't make a sound, and after a while, I heard him go on off. I could hear the bushes popping, like he had just struck off blind through the woods. And when daylight came, he hadn't got back. Well, I didn't say anything. I didn't know what to say. I kept on believing that he would show up, would come walking up out of the bushes, face or no face. So I built up the fire and got breakfast started, and after a while I heard her climbing out of the truck. I never looked around, but I could hear her standing there like she was looking around. Like maybe she was trying to tell by the way the fire or my blanket looked if he was there or not. But I never said anything, and she never said anything. I wanted to pack up and get started. And I knew I couldn't leave her in the middle of the road. And that if my wife was to hear about me traveling the country with a good-looking country gal and a 3-week-old baby, even if she did claim she was hunting for her husband, or both husbands now, so we ate, and then I said, "Well, I got a long road, and I reckon I better get started." And she never said nothing at all. And when I looked at her, I saw that her face was just as quiet and calm as it had ever been. I'd be dog if she was even surprised or anything. And there I was, not knowing what to do with her, and she done already packed up her things and even swept the truck out with a gum branch before she put in that paper suitcase and made a kind of cushion with the folded blanket at the back end of the truck. And I says to myself, "It ain't any wonder you get along. When they up and run away on you, you just pick up whatever they left and go on." "I reckon I'll ride back here," she says. "It'll be kind of rough on the baby," I says. "I reckon I can hold him up," she says. "Suit yourself," I says. And we drove off, with me hanging out the seat to look back, hoping that he would show up before we got around the curve. But he never. Talk about a fella being caught in the depot with a strange baby on his hands. Here I was with a strange woman and a baby, too, expecting every car that come up from behind and past us to be full of husbands and wives, too, let alone sheriffs. We were getting close to the Tennessee line then, and I had my mind all fixed how I would either burn that new truck up or get to a town big enough to have one of these ladies' welfare societies in it that I could turn her over to. And now and then I would look back, hoping that maybe he had struck out afoot after us, and I would see her sitting there with her face as calm as church, holding that baby up so we could eat and ride the bumps at the same time. You can't beat them. He lies in the bed, laughing. "Yes, sir. I'll be dog if you can beat them."
Then what? What did she do then?
Nothing. Just sitting there, riding, looking out like she had never seen country. Roads and trees and fields and telephone poles before in her life. She never saw him at all until he come around to the back door of the truck. She never had to. All she needed to do was wait. And she knew that.
Him?
Sure. He was standing at the side of the road when we come around the curve. Standing there, face and no face, hang dog and determined and calm, too, like he had done desperated himself up for the last time, to take the last chance, and that now he knew he wouldn't ever have to desperate himself again. He continues. He never looked at me at all. I just stopped the truck and him already running back to go around to the door where she was sitting. And he come around the back of it and he stood there, and her not even surprised. "I done come too far now," he says. "I'll be dog if I'm going to quit now." And her looking at him like she had known all the time what he was going to do before he even knew himself that he was going to, and that whatever he done, he wasn't going to mean it. "Ain't nobody never said for you to quit," she says. He laughs, lying in the bed, laughing. "Yes, sir. You can't beat a woman. Because do you know what I think? I think she was just traveling. I don't think she had any idea of finding whoever it was she was following. I don't think she had ever aimed to, only she hadn't told him yet. I reckon this was the first time she had ever been further away from home than she could walk back before sundown in her life. And that she had got along all right this far with folks taking good care of her. And so I think she had just made up her mind to travel a little further and see as much as she could, since I reckon she knew that when she settled down this time, it would likely be for the rest of her life. That's what I think. Sitting back there in that truck, with him by her now and the baby that hadn't never stopped eating, that had been eating breakfast now for about 10 miles, like one of these dining cars on the train, and her looking out and watching the telephone poles and the fences passing like it was a circus parade. Because after a while I says, "Here comes Salisbury." And she says, "What?" And I says, "Salisbury, Tennessee." And I looked back and saw her face. And it was like it was already fixed and waiting to be surprised, and that she knew that when the surprise come, she was going to enjoy it. And it did come, and it did suit her. Because she said, "My, my, a body does get around. Here we ain't been coming from Alabama but 2 months, and now it's already Tennessee." This is Scott Brick. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Light in August by William Faulkner. This program was produced by Dan Musselman and directed by Kimberly Farr. Text copyright 1932 and copyright renewed 1960 by William Faulkner. Production copyright 2005, Random House, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.